Another day of ETH Denver. I'm Eureka John, and it's the morning time. We lucked out getting a studio here, and a good friend of mine, Donnie Clutterbuck, he was previously a host on Don't Say NFT. If you haven't heard any of those podcast episodes, please go back and listen to them. They are phenomenal. So I'll let you guys introduce yourselves and what you're into, what brings you to Ethereum Denver, and what your little niche in crypto is.
How's it going? I'm Swayze Digital. I'm the artist for Fimojis and partner with Donnie over here on the team of Fimojis. We're on Bitcoin Ordinals. Got into digital art back in, well, forever, but really got into digital art specific to cryptocurrency back in 2020 when everybody's sitting at home and kind of researching new things to do. So found Ethereum and started to do some one-of-one digital art and sold it to a guy who wanted to create a collection. And over the two-year kind of building, we landed on Bitcoin Ordinals, and we have our second collection that came out in December. So Fimojis Genesis and Fimojis 2.0. We brought Donnie onto the team, and it's just been an amazing, amazing experience. This guy is super creative and has given us a nice little trajectory of where we could go and what's possible with Bitcoin. But I love both chains. Ethereum is excellent. The capacity is huge to be able to do so many things. There's so many great artists. I'm inspired by some, like pretty much all Ethereum artists.
That's where you started out.
Yeah.
Like you still interact pretty regularly.
Yeah. I got a lot of friends on crypto Twitter that are still on Ethereum and have some plans to kind of do some one-of-ones on Ethereum as well soon. So
right on.
Yeah. Sick.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm at Ethereum Denver this year is sort of different from the reason that I came last year. The reason last year was that getting into just the concept of solving double spend and what that applies to outside of just money, because like cryptocurrency is cryptographically encoded currency of an, like it's like a token of an operating, or an operating token of a system. So like, it is not just that this is money. And as soon as you get past that, it opens up, like what is money even? Like if you heard Michael Saylor talk about like money as energy and what is energy and how energy runs the world, or it runs literally every interaction between any two things kind of.
Yeah.
The possibilities of what this technology can do, like we don't know where we are in history, but I think we have more context for knowing where we are in history than we ever had before because of the speed of transfer of information. And this feels really meaningful and life-changing. And it's not just that Bitcoin is the life-changing one, it's that every other technology out there stands a chance to change something. So I came here because it's kind of a combination of all of that stuff, and because you guys were here last year, obviously, we were here. And then I got super into Bitcoin when Bitcoin at first, when I got into crypto probably around the same time you did. I feel like I was late, kind of. But I was bored by Bitcoin because it was just like still there. That's what it felt like to me. It felt like it was just there. Kind of like you, when you live by the ocean, you're like, the ocean, why am I gonna go to the ocean today? It's just like, it's still there. It's gonna be there tomorrow. It's been there for millions of years. Like, what's the point, right? And that didn't set in until this previous 365 days-ish. So like I thought the technology was the point, like that Ethereum and Hedera and like Solana were the only things that mattered because they were the ones like pushing boundaries. What I realized in the last year is that Bitcoin is essentially the ocean. It's like this force of nature that no one controls that we can all just try to surf and we can try to like work around and with, but it's fundamentally different. So I wanted to explore fully what Bitcoin can do, especially with the onset of Ordinals, which is where we both currently work with Fimojis anyway. The concept of putting data on chain and getting it to be more, I don't want to say respectful to the chain, something that we do, it's like a software as a service company masquerading as an NFT project, kind of, like that's what Fimojis is. We have software where if, let's say there's like a 10K PFP collection where 300 characters are wearing this sweatshirt, normally you would have to inscribe that sweatshirt or put that data on chain all 300 times. We've found a way to put that data on chain once and then reference it 300 times with just bytes of code. So you can reduce your on-chain footprint by like 90% typically is what we've seen. Like if it would have cost you 120 grand to put this 10K PF like pixel piece on chain on Bitcoin, it can cost you 12, which is pretty cool. It's not just cool for that, but it's cool that node runners now don't have to have a 7 gigabyte node to run the full Bitcoin node because there's like less than there could be and exactly as there much as there needs to be on chain. Right. So we're finding ways. It's been really fun to like dance around Bitcoin, I guess. Because like I said, Bitcoin's going to be what Bitcoin's going to be.
Yeah.
It doesn't care what we think. It doesn't care what you think or think. But if we can get a pixel collection on there, because people like doing this stuff, like it's like, this is the way that we push boundaries. We get people excited about art or gambling or, you know, shit coins or whatever. Or, I'm sorry if I wasn't supposed to say that. I don't know what PG-13, whatever.
Shit coins a universal we'll bleep word it out. Now.
That's right. That's not even a bad word. Like, I'm not passionate about shit coins, but I am passionate about people starting to care about technology when they didn't have a reason to before.
Yeah.
So we're playing that game. We're trying to get everybody interested in Bitcoin, not like onboarding, not like trying to win the blockchain battle or something, but like if it's a place that you can help or be helped, then you ought to be there. And you would never know that until you have a reason to care. And I didn't until Ordinals popped up. So,
okay.
You know, that, why I'm at ETH Denver though, it's a really long story. There's a reason. I came here because I think that anybody who may eventually want to be participating in this new Bitcoin ecosystem is probably in this building.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not here to shill it, but I'm here to like sniff around and see if it does solve problems for people who have them, such as like permanent data storage, one-time fee data storage, which is what Bitcoin is.
Yeah.
Pretty wild, you know?
Okay, so Femojis is it on top of Bitcoin, like a layer abstracted on top of?
It's an NFT project and totally separate software that's not on-chain at all.
Oh,
so
okay.
you can essentially upload all of your traits, and Generate Ord, which is the software that we have, will spit out a 10K PFP collection that's all code that you can then inscribe onto Bitcoin. So you can take this packet that we make for you and put it onto the Bitcoin blockchain at 90% lower of a file size than it would have cost you otherwise. Mm-hmm. Because one of the main constrictions with Bitcoin is that each block can contain like a maximum of 4 megabytes of data, which is really not the maximum. The maximum is reasonably so is more like 1 or 2 megabytes.
Yeah.
So you know how much that is, right? That's like an iPhone picture.
Right.
How do you get a 10K PFP, especially of high resolution art? How do you do that? How do you get that on Bitcoin when each block can only contain a certain amount? It takes a lot of finagling, especially with no smart contracts. So we've had to find a lot of weird ways. Recursion is one of them, which is when you put something on chain in one block and in later blocks, you reference it. So you can put, let's say a ninth of a picture on chain every block. At 1 megabyte, let's say, and then the next block can tie all those together into a giant piece that's just bytes, but it references a total of 10 megabytes. You know what I mean? So like, we're, as an ecosystem, finding new ways of like sneaking around in Bitcoin and getting things there that shouldn't be, and at the same time, trying to lower the footprint of things we want to be there, both for financial reasons and just so that the chain's not as heavy as it like otherwise could be, you know, because you got to carry it around forever.
Sure.
That's it. Once it's there, it's there.
Yeah. Okay. I've heard people say the way compressed files work a lot of times is like a certain pixel is stored in the memory, and until that pixel changes, then it doesn't use up any more file size until there's a change in that pixel. So that's why somebody can compress a file and a video file, for instance, if a certain pixel in that video file has not changed until a few seconds
it's
down the line.
Essentially a picture, not a video.
But yeah. You know, so is that kind of how this works as well? Like you say, and you're referencing previous,
compression is different than referencing stuff. Right. Compression you would do anyway. You want it to be as light as it can on its initial footprint, but referencing the data is just putting literal bytes of code that point in this new inscription, point back to the data that's already inscribed. But that data would also be compressed because you wouldn't want to put something on chain at 2 megabytes that could look almost the same on every, like a 4K monitor at 1 megabyte.
Okay.
So why would you put more on than you need? Which is an awesome question to have to ask, because when you have constrictions, not only does that make you, I think, a better artist when you have to like work around things, it makes you have to work around things, and then it makes us think about what we actually want. Like if you have a 10 bedroom house, you might accumulate a lot more stuff than you need. But if you have to move it all into a studio apartment, you might find out what you actually cared about. That's sort of what this has made us have to do. We think about the things like, instead of just firing all this stuff somewhere on some server somewhere that does actually take up energy or utilize energy, we really need that? Do we want it? What's important to us? And it's not up to us to say what's important to other people, but it's up to them to consider what they want to pay to get on chain. So the constrictions, I think, are really great.
Well, speaking of taking up energy, I mean, that's been one of the big arguments against the Bitcoin blockchain.
I love this argument.
Yeah, I want to hear
your take on that. Are you passionate about this too? I'm insanely passionate about this.
Take it away.
These are numbers from 6 months to a year ago, probably. So the hash rate has gone up. The total energy consumption has definitely gone up since I did this very light research, but not so far in the past, like very recently. The amount of energy used by Bitcoin on a yearly global basis was the same as the amount of energy used by clothing dryers alone in the United States of America alone. What do we care about? Do we care about the the decentralization and maybe like corruptibility of money and resources? Or do we want our clothes dry faster in one country? I think it's an absurd argument. Also, I guess it's not absurd. Okay, using a lot of energy is a bad thing because it makes the place that we are, stinky and we can't breathe it. But like maybe move closer to your workplace, right? If you really care about that, if you're ever going to say that and you've used a weed whacker, you're being a hypocrite, right? Like if you've done anything, if you've driven to work, it's hypocritical of anyone to say that Bitcoin uses power. Also, the proof of work is necessary to keep something incorruptible because having this like 13-year proof of work history is the most uncorruptible thing that's ever happened made by humans. And there's no other network that has that. So we really have to think about what we care about in order to use that as a metric for like how much power ought to be used. And on top of that, if you have a windmill farm, there is line loss from the windmill to wherever this is supposed to go and be used, right? So like the amount of power you make is less than the amount of power you consume. Also, power consumption is inconsistent while power creation is kind of consistent, or most of the time is. It's, you can fire up a coal plant and turn it off, but a nuclear power plant, once it's moving. You know, it's just like flip it on and flip it off. Okay. Wind is the same. You can turn it off, but why not harness the power, right? If the place that is near the windmill farm doesn't need the power, let's say all summer, because it's not an air conditioning place, but they need the power in the winter for heat, what do you do with the power all summer? Do you turn the windmills off, or do you pull up a big rig full of Bitcoin miners and add security to the network that makes humanity better?
Stranded energy.
Utilize the or flare gas.
Yeah.
You know, like there's just these like bursts of energy flying all over any oil producing place that you can just pull up a big, or like build a container full of Bitcoin rigs and like make money off of the flare gas and contribute to network security.
Okay.
So like it is using a lot of power, but it's also capturing a lot of power that goes unused typically, which I think is a net positive. And it's also making contributions to humanity that are, I would say, greater than being stuck in LA in traffic with your car running because it doesn't turn itself off when you're still.
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those arguments that I think that people like to latch. When people are uneducated on a topic, they love to have strong opinions about it. That's one of those opinions.
Okay. All right. So I want to bring it back to Fumoji a little bit. Who are you trying to market to and to reach out to specifically for your product?
So this is a good question. And originally when Sanj, who is the founder of Fumojis, he reached out to me. He bought one of my original pieces on Ethereum back in January 2022.
Okay.
So we were one of the words, I had like 400 words to have to illustrate. And one of the words was FOMO. And immediately I thought to myself, well, FOMO makes me feel sad. The first thing that popped in my head was the sad emoji in your phone. I quickly looked up the laws about emojis, and they're classified as a universal language, so there's no copyright on them.
Okay.
You can just take it and sell it on a t-shirt if you wanted. So I drew the sad emoji, and I put tattoos on it and little, you know, eyebrow rings, and just made it look punk. I'm a 90s kid, grew up skateboarding, surfing, loved, you know, Trans World magazines and seeing all those crazy cool ads. So I kind of put that little vibe into it, and then I drew the word FOMOji over the top for FOMO and emoji, kind of brought that in. And then when I submitted that day's work of illustrations for the crypto bingo to Sanj, he immediately like zoomed in on the FOMOji, screenshot it, sent it back to me, and was like, what do you think it would take for us to do a full collection just on this? He's like, I love this so much. This is an amazing idea. And so we basically went full storm on that. And like I said, we were originally on Ethereum, so we were slotted to release on Ethereum.
Okay.
So the style of art on Ethereum is very varied, but the most popular ones are the iconic cartoon looking characters. Right at the time, Doodles was flying. And so I did this like mixture of like what I like in art. So I like that kind of 90s cartoon vibe. Mm-hmm. And then I really resonated with doodles.
Yep.
So that was kind of my inspiration on like the way it looks. And then we kind of put it on ice because we realized that Ethereum and OpenSea was just getting super saturated with tons of PFP collections, yeah. And people just didn't even know where to look.
Yeah, so much.
Yeah, in exactly. Yeah. And we didn't want to get buried in that noise, so we decided to put it on ice. And December of 2022 is when like the inklings of ordinal technology started. I know, where
is it?
Are
2024
we?
Right now?
Yeah,
so it was the end of 2022 when ordinals protocol was being built and released, right. And it wasn't public until February of 2023, I think.
Right.
Okay.
Like it wasn't live.
I got a question though. Like this seems like a strange transition going from an Ethereum NFT project to a Bitcoin ordinal project. Did you migrate that art somehow, or did you reproduce it, or like?
It never happened.
Well, on Ethereum. Yeah. So we didn't release it. So I had the art ready. I had hundreds of traits ready to go. All characters, all the expressions in my iPad on Procreate, ready to go. Because I was working and building on it for a year.
Okay.
And then we decided to put it on a hiatus and kind of were tossing up the idea of maybe not even putting it out on Ethereum at all. We were going to wait to see what the market was going to do, if that type of art was going to be recognized or at least accepted by the community on Ethereum. Okay. And then during that wait period, the Ordinals protocol got kind of pushed.
Yeah, and Sandstar closing in on 10,000 inscriptions. It was in like 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 inscriptions. Because they're like, they're basically labeled. Every time you put something on chain using the Ordinals protocol, it's like inscription number 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
Right.
So it was closing in on 10,000 inscriptions, and Sanj and Swayze were trying to get in under 10,000 inscriptions, just because like humans love round, flat numbers.
Yeah,
like,
and the
a lot
the
of
idea,
zeros is fun, you know.
Right. The idea is like the most popular thing on Ethereum or NFTs in general was a 10,000 piece collection, and so that was the first 10,000 ordinals is looked at as.
It's its own collection, even though it's from
it's broken
hundreds
up into
of different
artists
people.
Or whoever wanted to inscribe. Mm. Those first 10,000 are going to be very valuable and sought after for the rest of ordinals.
For scale, inscription number 2 just sold 3 days ago for 23 Bitcoin.
24. Okay.
24 Bitcoin. 4. That's right, 24.
Yeah, $1.4 million on inscription number 2, which is a really goofy
parrot
doing this motion in a GIF, and the colors are vibrant.
And it's alone. It's not like a part of a larger, you know, sweeping collection or something. It's just one of those things that's like, how close to the front of the line were you?
Right.
Sure.
You know, when the protocol wasn't even live yet. That was probably the first thing put on while it was live, actually, because the one before that is a crypto dick butt that was not, well, it's like the, one of the other current maintainers or someone who sort of like helped build the protocol had to hack into it before it was live to inscribe that crypto dick butt so that Casey, the guy who made it, would be the only one to see it, and he would fire up the protocol or look on chain and like be the meme where someone looks over your shoulder and you're looking at a dick butt.
Dick butt. I've seen that painted at skate parks all over the place. Yeah. Is that where it started? Or
I have no idea. Okay. Honestly,
it started on ETH.
There's this meme.
Yeah, I think it did.
I swear I've seen people spray paint dick butt on tons of skate park transitions.
Oh, so, yeah.
I don't know where it came from, but there's like a meme where you see like a guy looking at a computer and then it zooms to over his shoulder and he's just like looking at a crypto dick butt. And I don't know where this thing started, but it's a thing that happens. Yeah. So this dude, Rindale, was like making a joke directly at the creator of the Ordinals protocol, knowing that he was the only one who could see this.
Okay, all right.
And putting a crypto dick butt on his screen when it wasn't supposed to be able to do that, and just like laughing about.
Yeah.
So like the inscription number 0 is Casey's first thing. It's like something he did. It's like a sugar skull.
Day of the Dead.
Yeah, it looks
skull.
Like a Mexican sugar skull. And then inscription number 2 is an inscription that shouldn't, or 1 rather, the dick butt, is one that shouldn't have existed. So like number 2, the one that just sold, is essentially like, I think, the first live.
Like the first artistic.
Actual inscription.
On it,
from the live protocol. Right?
So was
I think.
It financial motivation to land on ordinals, or was it because Ethereum gas prices?
It was honestly undersaturation versus oversaturation. It was a brand new protocol that was going to allow this very adult blockchain that kind of bored people to death, even though it was the first one, in my opinion. You know, Bitcoin is obviously the king coin, but for the longest time, it was looked at as like just market value, and like
it
was very adult and boring, in my opinion.
It's looked at as like it's like an infrastructure, not a fun playground. Right. Is what it's been seen.
There's a lot of projects like John Ruth is sitting on the couch across the street, and he's focused on like regen versus degen and public goods works. Like,
sure.
What type of applications besides like art and financial applications can you do on Bitcoin?
Ooh, this is fun.
Yeah, this is great.
You want to or you?
Well, honestly, I just want to kind of plug in my new collection, Ducks on Chain, is a cartoon collection that is basically a gateway into a website that we're creating called WikiBeaks, which is kind of a nod to Julian Assange and WikiLeaks.
Oh, cool, yeah.
Duck joke,
WikiBeaks. But it's gonna be basically the first ordinal application for like normal people
to be
able to inscribe on Bitcoin blockchain documents, data, stuff that you feel that the rest of, you know, time should know.
Sure.
And immutable,
incorruptible.
Incorruptible, like whatever you feel, because we got people all over the world interested in crypto. And so creating this place that makes it an easy shop to go there and put, you know, something that came out of your government that is squashed now or hidden, something like that. But basically, it's just really cool to be able to have immutable information on chain for eternity.
Yeah.
Okay, so the art is basically just the gateway for it.
Exactly.
It always is.
Yeah.
Right? So it's a duck, obviously, and kind of same, you know, scenario with the rest of other PFPs where it's trait based and then generated with recursion like we talked about.
Yeah.
So we inscribe individual traits, like a hat that's floating in a PNG form just by itself,
blank
like
background.
Where it's supposed to be. And then the expression, you know, on the body, all that kind of stuff is all individual on PNGs inscribed onto blockchain. So that is on the chain. And then it's using recursion code to generate the collection and the combination.
Like one piece will grab the hat, it'll grab this shirt, it'll grab that duck body or whatever. And then it's just like
and it
bytes
builds out
of code instead of hundreds of kilobytes of high resolution art per.
Right.
Where it looks like hundreds of kilobytes of high resolution art, but it's really just a few bytes.
So getting one of those ducks gets you access to like being some of the first people that can inscribe the documents on WikiBeaks when it launches. So that's kind of one way that we personally are utilizing Bitcoin's chain.
Okay.
Donnie's got some more examples as well.
Man, there's a million ways. Every time there's a book that somebody writes that somebody decides it shouldn't exist and it either gets burned. I mean, it's happened historically. Right now, currently, where we are, wherever I've been, there's not book burnings, but there's a lot of like filtering what people see and how they see it. And whether or not you view that as good or bad or what is right or wrong in writing is kind of up to the consumer or the producer in a lot of ways, which whether that's good or bad, again, I'm not here to make that decision. But what I think is beautiful about Bitcoin is that it is a facilitator, not an arbiter. It's not here to tell you that what you've said is wrong or what you're reading is something you shouldn't read. It's here to say, this is what is.
Yeah, okay.
And we're just here to show you that, you know, like, so you can just go on chain past any regulatory structure at all and view it. If you run a Bitcoin node, you fire it up, you download the node, you can navigate the blockchain and view anything that's ever been put there. So think about data archives, medical records. There's something called reinscription where you can add new inscriptions behind the first inscription that is attached to
a revision history, provenance.
Yeah, and then it's all viewable in order. So like we were, actually Fimojis helped with this. Before I was on the Fimojis team, I drew this rat. I have brain damage. I can't remember any other moment than right now. So like, I don't know what you look like right now, but I recognize you when I see you, kind of like how when you see a new door, you recognize it as a door, you know how to use it, you're familiar, this is the knob, I push it, I pull it, whatever, it's inherent, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see a new door, you recognize it's a door. When I see you, not the time we saw each other in Permissionless, but now, you're another John.
Yep.
That's the only way I can see the world. I have these like forms in my head, so I was doing this experiment to see like what it looks like when I draw something. And the first thing was a rat. It just looks like no rat in every rat. It's like a line drawing of a rat. And at that time, reinscription had just come out as a thing that was possible to do and accepted by the Ordinals protocol. So I wanted to explore that. And I said, I started passing the rat out, this single rat sat, to friends who are artists and seeing what they...
I like the alliteration.
And I wanted to see, it really, like it grabbed a lot of people. It was pretty cool. We made hats and we gave them out. But giving these sat, like I would send you the rat sat, you would draw a rat in the way that you think of rats, whether you think of rats as like Splinter from the Ninja Turtles or pizza because of that, or like Tekashi 6ix9ine because he ratted on his homies. Like there are now 85 reinscriptions on this rat that travel with it on the same Satoshi. He did actually. And it's in like the last 10 or something. So if you find this somehow, it is number 66. That's right. Yeah. So close.
Yeah.
So, three away.
Yeah. So that inscription could kind of create the form of a rat, like abstract form. Was it Plato that came up with
the form? Crowdsourced indicator of what people see when someone sees something that they don't have any experience to put towards it.
Yeah.
And then everyone else sees stuff that they have their mandatory experience that they have to put on it. We now have this chronologically ordered history that's immutable of everything everyone ever thought about this thing, who touched it, that is. So it's a really limited data set, but it's a permanent one that shows something. Okay. How do we use this? We can make three-dimensional data trees using other sorts of inscription relationships. Again, archives, I think, are a really big part of that. If you want to publish something and have it not be mutable or censored, explorers will censor things still. There's a lot of things on ord.io that are censored because they don't want to be a place that you can't navigate at work.
Okay.
And anything can be put on chain. So there's a lot of weird stuff there. So some of that stuff is censored, but it's not censored on the Bitcoin side. It's censored on the explorer side.
Sure.
Which I think is totally fine.
Okay.
But if, as long as you run a node, you can explore the blockchain fully independently of any censorship. So sky's the limit.
Okay.
Use cases, anything that you would want to be there that you don't want someone to be able to take off.
So it's not really about the art or the rat. It's about the definition of things.
Exploration of
putting words to
possible use cases. Possible use cases. Yeah. Like when re-inscription came out, I was thinking to myself, no one's going to spend the money to re-inscribe something they don't care about on something they don't care about. And they're also not going to take the leap and inscribe, take a $300,000 piece and inscribe on that. So like, where, how do we start exploring this? Like, we need to give people permission to do it on something that's expressly made for that. So I made a collection of 70 things and just kind of handed most of them out to see if anybody else would start trains like this. And a few of them actually do have re-inscriptions on them, but none of them have like 85. Because that was really like, it was a project that I wanted to see succeed. So I pushed it like crazy.
Okay.
And I still just have it. It's just in my wallet. And it's funny because like you, when you send someone an NFT, like a normal NFT, they just get the NFT.
Yeah.
If you send someone the rat, 85 other things show up with it. Wow. It really clogs your wallet up. It's kind of funny. Yeah. So whatever wallet I have it in, it's just like there's, you don't
it's
see
like
anything else that's in it.
File.
It's really annoying. Yeah, totally. So there's a lot of funny stuff.
What re-inscriptions are?
Oh, sure. Yeah, re-inscriptions, like an inscription is when you attach data ownership that is on chain to a Satoshi. So when you hold this single UTXO, which is basically a packet of little teeny tiny pieces of Bitcoin.
Transaction outfit.
It is, because Bitcoin doesn't recognize the smallest unit of Bitcoin, the Satoshi, as something transferable. So you can't move one Satoshi. You have to move it in a packet of other ones. Mm-hmm. So when you own this thing, you own the inscription that is on that thing. Or it's not on it technically, that's associated with it. But now we can associate more and more inscriptions with this very same packet over the course of time.
Okay.
So then the packet, the ownership packet, transfers with the UTXO.
Okay.
So the re-inscription is just more and more inscriptions that are associated with this single UTXO that can then be sent over. And then, like, people always say things like, why do you need to own data? Like, what's the point of that? Because you can modify the data when you own it. You can't modify what's been done. But you can
get
add
paid
to
for it. Too.
You can get, of course, you can do that. I mean, there's many reasons to do it.
Yeah.
But in this case, particular, like, why would you want to own your medical records so that only you can add to them, potentially? Or why do you want your doctor to own your medical records so someone else can't just insert things on it? So, you know, again, data archives.
I mean, I always say, like, owning your data is like a UBI. Everybody has a unique experience. Your preschool teacher tells you, you are special. There's nobody like you. Good or bad, whatever you are extremely unique, you know? And the church says that God says that you are perfect and you are just perfect just the way you are, right?
Yeah.
Well, you have data that nobody else has. And if AI could use that data and pay you for it on a constant basis, that's a UBI right there.
Right.
You know, whether it's on Bitcoin or Ethereum, I don't know, you know, that's up for debate or both,
it's,
you know?
It just depends on what we deem necessary to live for how long.
Yeah.
You know, like you don't need to put things on chain that you only need for like family photos. Like if you don't care about your family photos reaching the next two generations, put them on an IPFS server. Sure, who cares, right? But if you want them to be like, if you think this is an historic moment where like you and your wife met, and this is the beach picture where that happened, and then you want to add family photos to that, and you want descendants to be able to see that, the safest place you can put it is on-chain in the only network that's financially incentivized to literally never go away.
Any further thoughts on that?
No, I think it's... cool. And it's cool to see like what is going to be put on-chain, and then, I mean, obviously we won't be here to see it, but hundreds of years from now, when people look back on some of the original inscriptions, they're gonna see our culture and humor and interest.
You know what they're gonna realize we're humans just like every other human. If you look at like the pyramid, you know, the things that are left from the last 5 to 20,000 years of human civilization, we look at these things as if they're the only things there, but I'm sure there were like mud and straw huts and cement buildings and stuff that didn't last that long. Mm. But the things that did, like the cave drawings and the things that are etched on the inside and the outside of various pyramids, it's all the same stuff.
Right.
It's drugs, fertility, lizard gods, Pepe. It, yeah. Honest to God, the first 10,000 inscriptions and probably everything that came after it is just us doing what humans have been doing for tens of thousands of years, potentially right. hundreds. Differently.
Right.
Who knows? It's elating.
Wireless technology, and the only thing left over is the mud huts.
Maybe, yeah, right. I know. So I think it's fun to watch us recreate all these things that we've been doing for so long in a very different way that might, again, this might be the only thing that does outlast the Sears Tower when people stop maintaining. Have you ever seen, like, there's this house next to my parents' house where no one's lived there for like 20 years. The dude bought it and he's like, I'm gonna fix it up. And then he never does. And it's a wooden house that was built in the early 1900s and it's like sturdy, but it's collapsing into itself. And most of what we've done other than like car tires, plastic bottles, like anything made of like a hard plastic, that's gonna outlive a lot of what we think is currently like what's important, I think. If our relic is only like fun on-chain data and rubber, I would like to think that the on-chain data is gonna outlast the rubber, I hope,
right? Anyway, yeah.
You know? So like, I just think it's the best shot we have at doing something that's as permanent as the other things that we witness and think are the important things. You know, this feels permanent enough to actually be that way.
And it's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, if it's not fun, why do it?
You know, right.
It,
oh God,
if it was start out as fun. You know, everything starts
It wasn't
out.
For so many years, and now it
yeah.
is.
Yeah, unless you made tons of money on Bitcoin's run.
Yeah, people like
then you
money,
just weren't having
sure.
fun or the idea of Bitcoin. Yeah. I mean, you can get all nerdy for as long as you want, but it just wasn't really that fun.
Yeah.
And now it is, and it's awesome. It's getting more and more fun every day.
Bitcoin fun again.
Okay, yeah. But I do have a question, though. In order to be a part of the Ordinals community, right now, other blockchains are making it to where that you can't see what's under the hood. You know, right. You aren't even thinking about being on a crypto project in order to bring in the masses to work and to do anything in Ordinals in the Bitcoin ecosystem. You have to be like seriously intentional about it. Like, how do you get around that?
You'd be seriously intentional about it. Well, or yeah. You develop software like Generate Ord that allows people, which is the software we run, that allows people to kind of just show up, ask some questions, execute their thing, and then learn from there.
Okay.
You know? So you don't have to know everything that's under the hood, but for the first year of anything, you do.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't easy to do stuff on Ethereum or Solana before there were, like, websites that would help you make NFTs or create yeah. smart contracts without being a developer, right?
Yeah.
Currently, we're still in the phase where you almost need to be a developer or have equivalent knowledge
yeah.
to be able to interact or at least like really care enough to try.
Well, every single little bit of ease of access kind of chips away at the decentralization aspect of
right.
it, you know, like signing in with your Google ID in order to set up a wallet, you
but
know.
Like everything is like that. Everything yeah. is input dependent. You don't get to climb Mount Everest if you don't climb for 20 years before that and try your ass off to do it. Like, not everyone should be able to climb Mount Everest
sure, yeah.
because it's something that you have to really try to do. And I think it wouldn't be important if everyone did get to do it. So equity is important. Equality is important. Bitcoin provides equity. Anyone who has Bitcoin can spend it just like anyone else who has Bitcoin. But not everyone's always going to have the same amount of Bitcoin. I don't know how to solve that problem. And I think that goes for like how much time you have. How much you really care about putting something on chain. And I think it's made the early Ordinals collections really tight-knit, not exclusive, but really intentional, thoughtful groups.
Yeah.
The vibes, or whatever you want to call them, in the first year of Ordinals have been, I've never seen a series of people who all care so deeply about anything ever in my life, all at the same time, for the last year. And it's not to say there weren't like bad actors and people with motivations that I don't share, but that's the beauty of it. There have to be. It's a pond.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
going to be the fish that eats the other fish, and there's going to be like the thing that chews on the whatever's on the bottom,
yeah.
you know? Like, it's just been a really fun first year full of only the people who cared the most. Now everybody else is like starting to figure out why they might want to be there or getting to do so. But for the first year, not for the sake of exclusivity, which is just like a bunch of, I don't know, if you like World of Warcraft, you hang out with people who like World of Warcraft.
Sure.
It's just the nerds here.
That's a good analogy. It's almost like as if World of Warcraft was super popular. Everybody was on it, millions of users a day, and then
it's
all
not
of a
the
sudden,
kind of thing you can play for a day either.
Right.
You got to like that's a year long project.
But what happens when all the players drop off and there's only 1,000 people left playing?
Yeah. Right.
You guys become super tight knit,
yeah.
and you know each other's ins and outs, and you guys are passionate about World of Warcraft. That's what happened with Ordinals because in May, right. just volume dropped off. 95% of volume dropped off. People thought I was dead.
Yeah, and because the ordinals are dead.
Period. Yeah, and then you have left. Everybody got weeded out, and you have all of these builders and believers chilling there on crypto Twitter every day, trying to figure out what to do.
It shook out anybody who didn't care.
Yeah.
And everybody who really cared stuck around, and like it's
it left, all just it left the now. People that cared, it left the builders, it left the people that understood what ordinals could do. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, 6 months, 7 months past that, we've got quite a substantial infrastructure on it.
And that being said, if anybody does want to get in and they feel like they can't, just start joining communities, low entry communities, join Discords, talk to people, join Fomojis.
Yeah, speaking of which, you know, where can you find Fomojis?
Magic Eden.
Yeah, Magic Eden the on the Bitcoin spot, because they got it. Five different chains.
How would I find that?
MagicEden.io.
Yeah, MagicEden.io. It's basically the OpenSea of Bitcoin and Solana.
Yeah. Okay. It started with like mostly Solana volume, but then they moved to Bitcoin. Well, they also do Bitcoin and Polygon and Ethereum. But
They just integrated Ethereum with Yuga Labs and got that in there too. So, but yeah, Fomojis, we got two collections. The first Genesis collection is a collection of 100.
Okay.
We inscribed that February 8th.
And those are fully on chain. Those are not recursively.
Yeah, those are individual 100 JPEGs on chain, not recursively
built. Pretty high res considering current Bitcoin standards too. Nice. And the floor price on that is
like, we had to compress a little bit, but it's a 900 by 900 file.
That's right.
So it still shows up at a 1K, you know, 1080p TV. It shows up pretty nice.
Which is low for a lot of things, but it's really high for Bitcoin.
But it looks great on your phone.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And that's not, like, if you see that collection, the floor price is like 0.7 Bitcoin at the moment. That's maybe not the starting point, but the Fomojis 2.0 set, which is recursively made using the same kind of software idea that Generator, the thing that we're pushing, uses, the floor price is like 0.03 or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the community is surprisingly strong and has been it's not been a hype driven thing. You know how a lot of things like they launch and then they go bananas and then everybody drops off and then they go bananas and everything. This has been the most organic, the floor price is going up because people don't want to leave. It's most people buy NFTs or ordinals because they want to not have them eventually. And I think this is one of the few communities where people are buying them because they just want to have them and they want to be a part of it. So there's a lot of really smart people who have been in it since day one and a lot of new people who are becoming really valuable contributors to just like navigating a new ecosystem.
And what's cool is that there's 2009 in the second collection.
That's right, I missed that.
And then the first collection was so early that it brought on a lot of those people I was explaining earlier, those builders, those very passionate people about Bitcoin, people with money, founders, people that are interested in building on Bitcoin. And what's cool is about those two communities is that you have access to these people. Mm. A lot of the, we call them Fomoji Genesis, a lot of the Genesis holders are also founders of other projects or very heavily tied into other projects that are successful.
They're all hanging out in the same chat.
And they're all in the same chat, same Discord, same GC on Twitter. Very accessible people, very nice people. A lot of them were even at our party the other night.
There is a separate Genesis chat on Twitter and there is a separate Genesis chat on Discord just in case you ever find this out.
Just only because there's a cap of 200.
There's a cap of 200 and there's also like for the first 100 people who are there, sometimes the onboarding times are really hairy and you need a little like cave to go hide with your friends that you actually started hanging out with.
Right.
Because like when you do a mint, there's inherently going to be a bunch of people who buy it who don't want it.
Oh yeah.
And they're just there to flip and every day they're like when, flip, announcement, when floor, and like you gotta get away from that sometimes for the first few months. That's not the case now anymore, but the Genesis chat is there for those times when it occurs so you can actually not feel like you have to leave.
Yeah.
Right. Because it gets ugly sometimes. You know, the internet's a strange place. Yeah. It allows us to develop things that can change humanity for the better, but it also allows anybody to do whatever they want and be savages sometimes. I mean,
it's about money at the bottom.
Yeah, it is.
People want money.
Yeah. So win.
So MagicEden.io, click the Bitcoin tab, you'll see some really cool collections on there. And Fomojis has got two.
And the second one, actually, the background changes based on your locale. Oh, yeah. This is actually the first of its kind.
Yeah.
There are no dynamic anythings on Bitcoin because there's no smart contracts. So like, how do you do these things? Sanjan Vanix, the developer and the founder, found a way to get the background to switch from light to dark in two different designs based on your time zone at 7:06 a.m. 7:08 a.m. Block 78.
A nod
reference
to 78.
Yeah. How finny shit.
Right.
So every 7:08, wherever you are, it changes during the day to light mode and then during the night to dark mode.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's not like a day or night like specific like illustration. Mm-hmm. But there is a day and a night.
Yeah.
Illustration, but it's basically like brighter colors are the day mode,
sure,
and then darker colors and kind of creepy vibes.
And it's not because that, like, you could say, why does that matter? It doesn't matter anything more than anything else.
It's just cool.
Except that you can do it. Like, you can skate
we were the first to do
the store and back, or you can do a kickflip, and like, it's fun to do a kickflip, right?
Yeah.
That was why I said that. It's just doing something to see what it does.
Could turn into, right? It's like
exactly.
Wall Street Journal being a PDF at first, you know?
Yeah.
Skeuomorphic is what Chris Dixon calls it.
Yeah. Cool.
I think we're out of time, but thank you guys so much. This is from the source right here. If you haven't explored the Ordinals ecosystem or Fomojis, go check that out. Check it out. Let's not be tribal. And let's keep on keeping on. And thanks, guys.
Yeah. Dude, right. Thanks.